Welcome to Guys We Fucked. Guys We Fucked.
Guys We Fucked.
I'm Christina.
I'm Corinne.
We're sorry about last night.
The anti-slut shaming podcast. I never stop.
Hey, what up, fuckers? Welcome to another episode of Guys We Fucked.
It's the anti-slut shaming podcast. I'm Corinne.
I'm Christina.
And we love you so much. It's midnight.
It's so late.
We're in a soundproof room in Palo Alto, California.
And we're in a bunker.
And you know what? Sometimes it's fun and you want to just run to that mic and record that intro. And then sometimes you're like, why?
Oh, this is the only time
do this.
Why?
Well, maybe I should just work at Trader Joe's.
No, don't give up, Corinne. Thank you guys so much to everyone who's come out to these tour shows. Holy shit.
Yeah, you guys are insane. A lot of yelling.
Yeah. It was so nice to meet everybody after the shows. Thank you to everyone who came out so far, who bought a t-shirt. We really appreciate it. We really couldn't carry all of them around, so it's nice to lighten our load. And to everybody who's come up to us after the shows and said hi, or sometimes said really sad things that have happened to them, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah, we appreciate that sad things happen to you.
No, we appreciate your honesty and willingness to open up to us.
Oh, gosh.
Right?
Yeah, but I appreciate that almost as much as I appreciated all the emails from men commenting on our Hillary Clinton thoughts. It's so interesting. Literally not one fucking email from a woman
that went against
negative. Yeah. No negative emails, but a lot of mansplaining for why we were incorrect about on Hillary Clinton. I didn't know that my personal feelings on an individual could be incorrect, but they can be.
You know, one thing I kind of go by in life, if someone is mad, I want to hear them out. I want to listen because I feel like you can't be lying about being mad.
No, I'm sure they are mad. The difference is I just truly don't care.
No. What I'm saying is that when we express our frustrations over all this horse shit election. We're upset for a reason.
Right.
And, you know, I know, especially for me, it's very hard to articulate something when I'm upset. But if I'm upset or if anybody's upset, I try and hear them out.
Mm-hmm.
So just hear us out, please, men. We love you. You're great. A lot of you are like, totally, thank you so much. And all of the straight white men out there who are like, hey, this sucks that this happened, but I will be an ally for women and for the LGBT community and for minorities. Thank you so much. You don't get enough thank yous. And I just want to let you know that your support and enthusiasm towards the cause means a lot to me.
But if you're saying that just to get pussy, don't.
Yeah, I mean, it probably will get you pussy, though.
A lot of people say that. If you want to hear us out more, make sure to subscribe to Howl. You have to use this special URL. It's howl.fm/GWF. Some crazy shit's going on those bonus episodes.
I know.
So, you know, just sign up. And we do have some tour-exclusive shirts, or one. When I say some, I mean one.
You're wearing
selling
it right now.
I'm wearing it right now. Yeah, so make sure to keep an eye for that when you come to see us live. We'll be back in New York soon. On Wednesday, November 23rd, you can see The Comedian Project at 9 p.m. at The Standing Room. That's the Long Island City location for that show. It's Thanksgiving Eve. That's a fun time to get drunk. We love excuses to get drunk. Use code SEX for $5 tickets and come hang out with me and Katie Hannigan.
On Friday, December 2nd, in New York City's West Village, Wendy Starling and I will be doing the December edition of Glamour Puss at Zinc Bar. It starts at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $15. If you want a ticket, we sell out every month. Get the link for that is in the description of this podcast. It's 21 and over. We got some crazy shit planned for you.
And then later that day on Friday, December 2nd at New York Comedy Club, it's the December version of Nacho Bitches at 11:15 p.m. Come hang out with Blair Saki and myself. Use code NACHO for $10 tickets. And New York Comedy Club is 16 and up, so no need for crying face emojis. If you're younger than that, you should be in bed at that time. And our tour is still going on tonight. We will be in Chicago, Illinois, at the Athenaeum Theater. It's just people just keep correcting us, and now it just makes me want to say it incorrectly. Just stop emailing. There's more important issues than the fucking pronunciation of this word. Jesus Christ. We've almost sold out this show. We hope that we're going to sell it out. This is the podcast live. Going to be real fucking fun. Love Chicago.
And Cleveland, Ohio, we will be inside of you at Hilarity's Comedy Club on November 20th. There are still some tickets available. We hope you can make it. We hope you have a great time. This episode of Guys We Fucked is sponsored by Third Love. They make bras. They make really comfortable bras. They make some of the most comfortable bras that I personally own, especially as someone with not formerly double D's, currently D's, which I'm very happy about. These bras are really amazing. They're supportive and they're comfortable, and they don't feel like I'm carrying 8 tons of steel on my chest. So thank you, Third Love, for making a very comfortable bra. They stand behind their product so much that they're willing to let Guys We Fuck listeners try it for free. The t-shirt bra, which is the one I own, is very comfortable. Just pay for shipping. You can wear it for 30 days. You can even take the tags off, wash it. They really want you to really get into it, guys. And if you love it, you keep it, and they'll charge your credit card. If you don't like it, just send it back and your car won't be charged. If you don't know your size, a friendly online fit specialist will help you find the perfect fit. So just go to thirdlove.com/GWF to get started. That's thirdlove.com/GWF.
And this episode is also brought to you by Distilled Denim. That's DSTLD. Because they're fucking cooler than you. Guys, are you broke? And you're like, wow, I want good jeans that actually feel comfortable. Well, Distilled is doing that. It's high-end denim for the price point of just $65 as a starting price point. Usually denim like that is a couple hundred dollars. They have revolutionized the fashion industry with their timeless luxury-grade denim. They eliminate excessive markups by refusing to work with middlemen. And they ship directly to you for free and guarantee the fit, or they'll send you a new pair of jeans until they're perfect. Distilled jeans are built to last and will be a staple in your closet for years. They also just introduced a line of fall jackets. Whether you want something that's like classic denim or a bomber jacket, you can expect the same level of quality and convenience. So go to distilled.com. That's DSTLD.com/GWF right now and get $10 off your first order. DSTLD.com/GWF. And they're great. And Christine and I both own the same fucking pair, and they look great on both of us.
They look really good.
We're twins.
Twinsies. Let's read some emails. If you are interested in emailing us, our email address is sorryaboutlastnightshow@gmail.com. Send us your thoughts. The subject line of this email is Hillary Clinton comments from a Trump supporter. Hey, Corinne and Christina, I just listened to your most recent episode when Corinne sends out a message to the listeners after Trump won the election, and I just wanted to give some insight into the mind of a Trump supporter in a professional manner and point out a few flaws about the intro. First off, I'd like to point out that I did vote for Trump. I do enjoy your podcast, and I definitely think your work for women is important and meaningful. Thanks. I'm not putting women down in any way, and I hope you understand that my vote for Trump does not reflect the way I think about women. I'd like to begin by mentioning a few times where Corinne wanted women to band together to get the first female presidential nominee into the White House. Many women who did not vote for Hillary did so because of the questionable record she's had and the distrust they felt for her. I don't believe that women should band together to get a woman into the White House who does not embody the characteristics and motives they identify with. It is also important to point out that the Democratic Party affiliation of Hillary, a president with this party affiliation, has a specific agenda they must adhere to. I know for me, the thing that frightened me about electing Hillary Clinton was not only the distressed and questionable record, but the duration of her time in government. The episode before that one, when you spoke with Romney Malco, I remember one of you two commenting about how people at the top look out for each other. And this really spoke to me because that stigma you put on those in position of power is amplified to me with Hillary. She has been a politician for a very long time. Her connections with those in the highest level of government is extensive, and that has put her in a pompous position of authority that I don't believe should lead this country. I think politics corrupts people and their motives. And in a time where more and more people do not trust the government, we do not want to see a president that has spent a lot of her life in that scene. I know I was ready for a fresh face and a new attitude. I was especially thirsty for a leader who is against political correctness. And I know you two have probably read and heard the articles and interviews about how Trump supporters banded together because we were so sick of politicians like Hillary Clinton. Again, I am completely for a woman in the White House, but I do not believe Hillary Clinton is the right one. And it made me feel uneasy when Corinne read her statements about how women should have all banded together to elect her. And I also think you two may have hopped on the woman president train a little too early. Not to say that your feminism is wrong, but I do not believe that Hillary was the right woman for the job. And I know we will have to agree to disagree on this topic. I just want people with a position such as you two, have to not influence your young listeners with statements that make them think they have to be on board with everything a woman does. If Hillary Clinton was a man, I'm not sure too sure you guys would have voted for him unless you are Democratic. If you had read about a male Democratic nominee with a track record of such as Hillary's, I think we would share the same opinions about political influence and an overpopulated government of power-hungry politicians. In closing, I just want to reaffirm that I am in support of your movement and empowering women who have seen oppression and harassment and mistreatment for many years. I do think it is wrong, and I am ashamed of men who do this to women. They give us a bad reputation. However, I think it's important to choose the words and phrases you use carefully because you have a lot of listeners, not to mention young listeners. And these listeners are very privy to adopting the views of people they look up to. I understand how important a woman figure in the highest position of authority can empower women. However, I have to say that I disagree that she would have been the correct candidate to fill the position. Sincerely, this person's name.
Oh, man, I didn't know I had to download a fart sound effect for this episode.
No, you know what? I actually appreciate this email because Cool. I'm glad that people can at least write us with not anger. I have a couple problems with some of the things that this person said, but I am trying to figure out where the fuck people are coming from who are voting for Trump. I know people who are voting for Trump, and hearing from people who I don't agree with is very helpful. And this email I thought was very helpful. One of the things, though, that I wanted to point out with this email is, you say you're ashamed of the men who do this to women, who oppress women, harass women, mistreat them for years. That's Trump to me. I think Hillary Clinton was an amazing person for the job, not let alone a woman. We weren't voting for her just because she's a woman. If Sarah Palin was running for president, I would not encourage people to vote for her. And I wouldn't vote for her, certainly. And her gender has nothing to do with it. I think Hillary Clinton's gender for us was just the sweet cherry on top of a body of work that I believe is very well regarded and deserves this position. Obviously, she lost, so that's not going to change anything. But I just wanted to point that out because that's one of the things that really frustrates me. It's like, okay, Hillary Clinton did a few things that you think are the worst things that a presidential nominee could have done. But like a lot of other politicians have done those same things times 1,000, right? And I get that you want somebody who's left field, who's going to take everybody by surprise, who has no idea what the fuck politics are and has never been a part of the game. But he's now appointing people who have been a part of the game for their whole entire lives, some longer than Hillary Clinton. And for example, Mike Pence, his vice president, he has fought so rigorously to shut down Planned Parenthood clinics, and that it's almost like he doesn't want women to have reproductive rights or access to reproductive health care is how hard he has fought to shut down Planned Parenthood clinics in the state that he governs. So it's not that the whole I want somebody who's left field to me, I don't fucking buy it, because he's putting people in his cabinet and he's appointing Supreme Court justices who know what the fuck they're doing because they've been in politics for a very long time, but their agenda is, it's almost like some of their agenda is focused on repressing women's access to reproductive health care, LGBT, the right to marry who you want to fucking marry. And I get that, you know, I've read up when Ronald Reagan was appointed president, he appointed 3 Supreme Court justices that were more conservative during his presidency, and they fought really hard to take down Roe v. Wade, and they didn't do it. So I really do think I don't think that we're going to lose our right to services like, for example, the right to choose what we want to do with our body in terms of getting an abortion. I don't think that that's going to be made illegal nationwide because there have been so many attempts to make it illegal that have just failed. And I don't think that that's going to happen. I just really worry with so many voices in the White House that are so anti a woman's right to choose, for example, that people in the people who voted for him, he's just going to influence more people to think that that's okay. And it's not okay. And I'm never going to shut the fuck up about that. And I just wanted to put that out there because I think last week's intro, I was a little too angry to talk soundly. And now I am. So that's just what I wanted to say about that.
That being said, I mean, I think it's important to also remember that Donald Trump is our president-elect. And on December 19th, we might have the opportunity, I mean, if the fates align, for Hillary Clinton to become president because she did win the popular vote. That's a whole lot of stuff that you need to read up on the Electoral College and kind of maybe why that's not a great idea. However, I think the reasons why Donald Trump got elected was because people were pissed at a lot of millennials and really liberals who don't want to hear the opinion of anybody else. Acting the way we have. And we kind of talk about stuff like this as far as like being too PC as comedians. It certainly affected us. But, you know, just keep an eye on what Donald Trump's doing. Maybe he'll surprise us. Hopefully he'll surprise us.
Hey, he's already walked back on a few fucking gross things he said.
Yeah, I mean,
promises he's made. So that's exciting.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't want to be president. So I think he's just kind of taking the lead of other people.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, keep an eye out. And if we see things that aren't going well, we'll speak up. And now hopefully we've learned our lesson for next time.
Yeah. I hope he's the best president ever.
Yeah. I don't want to see him fail just because it's like, haha, Hillary should have won.
Yeah. We're not that fucking stubborn. Come on.
Yeah. And Hillary has been in politics a long time because this was her fucking life goal. And that's why she was busy doing it. So if there's a woman who voted for Trump, really would love to hear from you.
Yeah. Me too.
You know, just in a nice way. But I felt the other email was demeaning. And thanks so much for all the men who wrote us emails. This next email says is not about politics, so it's great.
Oh, you guys, take a breath.
It's about women, though. Ex-cop.
Oh, shit.
With some good news about domestic violence. Hey, ladies, I've been wanting to email you after listening to your podcast, specifically the one with the attorney who now works with victims of domestic violence. DV, as he calls it. A little bit about myself. I was a police officer for 2.5 years, Army veteran, and I am Black and Latino. Also, I am a guy. By the way, I quit being a cop because I got another position at a higher level in a different agency. Domestic violence laws have undergone a very drastic and mostly positive change in most states. I'll give you some examples to contrast with how your guest was treated. Victims. Some states will actually assume the role of the victim. What this means is that it's no longer up to the victim to, quote, drop or, quote, pursue once probable cause is established. The ball gets rolling, and the only way to stop it is by going to court. Harassment. Some, if not most, states now will classify DV not as a single crime, but more like an enhancement or special designation. What this means is that harassment, even digital, assault, battery, etc., get the domestic classification depending on the relationship between victim and suspect, which means crimes that do not seem as important, like harassment, get taken a lot more seriously. Allegations. Some states are, quote, shall arrest states, which means once probable cause, PC, is determined, someone will go to jail. No ifs, ands, or buts. In fact, the state where I was an officer, all you needed is an allegation. A warrant normally gets taken out within the hour if the suspect is not there. The victim also gets taken to a safe house if desired, and a temporary order of protection gets automatically tacked on the release conditions if the suspect makes bond, which is called a conditional order of release. These are only a few of the changes made. However, some states are not as progressive as others. For example, a family member of mine had to deal with some domestic violence in New York City, and I was shocked at how relaxed the, quote, almighty NYPD handled things. I mean, it's also in places where you have a lot of crime going on. Sometimes everything is not treated seriously. Also, things are really bad with immigrants being beaten and raped. The federal government actually made some real good strides and programs because things were so bad. That will probably go away now because America will be great again. I'm extending a lifeline here. If you have any questions that deal with law enforcement, use of force, domestic violence, etc., and would like answers from an ex-cop or a vet's perspective, I'm an email away. Well, thanks so much for writing in. That was more just an informative email. Because I know Christina and I don't really have a ton of info about domestic violence. Thank God, because we have not yet been involved with that. But you never know. You know, there's always tomorrow.
Today, tomorrow's another day. Another possibility to get punched in the face.
You never know. You just never know.
You really don't.
You know, always keep a bat in a catcher's glove. I don't know. Baseball, whatever.
It's anyway, so late.
Yeah, we got to go to bed. We have to fucking leave for Indianapolis in like 3 hours. So we're excited for you to listen to today's episode. The woman on today is a wonderful comic, a wonderful person, a fucking fierce feminist. You can catch her with her comedy partner. She's part of a comedy duo called Austin Martinez Comedy, and they have a show on True TV called Late Night Snack. Please give a warm welcome to our guest, Molly Austin.
Thanks
so much. We're recording, by the way.
Do I look like Elvis?
You look like Molly Austin on a fabulous chair.
Oh, we are recording?
Yeah, we're here with Molly Austin. You guys. So the last sentence you said before I pressed record was, I've been getting really into human sex trafficking lately, or like a year.
Or human trafficking.
Human trafficking.
And you know all these facts.
Yeah.
So you've just been like, you went on a internet black hole?
No, I did 6 years ago. I did a tour with Alice and Olivia, the clothing company.
Oh, I love them.
We toured through the Southeast and we gave makeovers to women in every town we landed in, and we would raise money for various charities.
Oh.
And when we were in Atlanta, we met women who had been sex trafficked, and we raised money for an umbrella company that helped these women kind of start over. And then we were given a book called Half the Sky by Nicholas Kristof.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. Someone told me to read that.
It's incredible.
What? Okay. Yes. I need to.
It's about, I'm assuming, trafficking.
Human trafficking. I mean, it's about women's various roles in the world and how it's from an ancient Chinese proverb that women make up half the sky. But basically how we aren't treated as entire humans globally.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is reflected in how successfully people are trafficked. Not to say that men aren't trafficked.
Men are trafficked too?
Yeah, men are trafficked too. Mostly boys, more than men. And then Tim Dillon just got into human trafficking.
From you?
No, on his own. There's a documentary on Netflix called Who Took Johnny or something like that.
I saw it and then I read the description and I was like, not today, Christina.
Well, the thing, that's what happens with human trafficking is that it's so huge that it happens something like every 3 minutes. And it's that makes it no longer news because it's
so common.
So common. And Atlanta International Airport is the largest sex trafficking hub in the world.
What?
Because
note to self. Holy shit.
Yeah.
The wow. Undercurrent. So if you see a scared, shaking person, odds are
they're being trafficked.
When you talk to these women who have been trafficked, what did did you talk about it, or did you kind of steer clear of that and just focus on like, hey, let's put these rad outfits on you and fucking play with your hair?
No, we did all that, but we also like, we were very lucky in the way that all these women kind of wanted to talk to us, and we got to spend some real time, and we really did get to like get the backstory from not only them, but from like counselors who work with the company. Mm. So a lot of it is like, a lot of it's heroin. So they'll get them hooked on heroin. So they can't, even if they get out, they can't get very far. And these are American women.
What?
So what happens in other countries is they're taken out of places where women are treated very poorly up top. They know the police are in on it because the police are the ones that are showing up to fuck them.
Other countries, or is this America as well?
I mean, it's America as well, but when they come here, they don't even attempt to run because there's no one to run to. So it's
because it's not their home country and they don't know no one.
Well, I mean, even in this country, like a lot of the times police and the FBI are in on it. Like I was saying before, like this story with Johnny Gosch, the mother went to the police and the police said he was a runaway. They wouldn't help her. Neighboring police forces came in and the police told them to go home. They called off search parties. The FBI wouldn't help her. And she had an ironclad case. Like she could have found him, and they like dismissed witnesses. The FBI said that the witnesses weren't credible, and it was.
So whoever was sexually abusing this little boy was probably close or a member of the police or the FBI.
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's a lot of people in our government who are. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's I think it's historically people in powerful positions. There will always be a percentage of those people who take advantage of that power.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that like I said this before, but when you're at the top of the food chain, like you don't hunt for your food. You pay someone else to hunt for it. Mm. So it's like, this is a delivery service that's going on.
Well, it's because like, just because you're rich doesn't mean you're not a pedophile or, you know, or someone who wants to pay for sex with anybody.
So right.
You're going to get it done for you. I mean, the thing is, it's like at a certain point you just stop. I mean, there are people who just stop caring about emotions. And if there's money in trafficking people, it's how is it different than goods, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's how a lot of people see it.
The people buying and selling these other people have no souls.
Right.
Or they've really gotten to a place where they can convince themselves that what they're doing is not bad enough to actually do it. That blows my mind.
I mean, I don't know what that piece, there's a piece of a person who can do that that's missing that I don't understand, because I can't look at someone and not like see myself. Do you know, does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And I think that that probably has a lot to do with like how I was raised, where I was raised.
How were you raised?
Just in like a, like you, how?
Yeah. Like what, how has that affected you? Like what was your
childhood? Where are you from? What's your like familial setup like growing up?
Sure. I have a younger sister and two parents who are still married. I guess everybody technically has two parents. and I grew up in New Jersey, and I just grew up in a house where like we weren't allowed to walk past litter. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Like, you pick it up
because like, are you too
do your
good?
Part.
Are you too good to pick it up? Like, right. Yeah. And it's
too good to pick up fucking litter, Molly. No. You pick that up.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
All right, Dad.
Okay, cool, Dad. and I just grew up. It's like interesting with like my father's a Republican, but he's very he's just very pro-choice.
Oh, good.
Pro gay. Most of my family's gay.
Oh, really? Like, most of your family's gay?
Well, like a lot of cousins come out gay.
Oh.
And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I got some uncles and aunts, and I'm like, you're gay.
do you have a big family? It sounds like you do.
No, it's just like gay. It's just
the
gay.
Members that are gay. Around are gay.
They're just pretty gay.
Awesome. Yeah. That sounds like a great family.
So, I mean, it was like an environment where you were just made comfortable to be yourself. And I think even in, you know, a modern, for all intents and purposes, a modern society, like not being homophobic in the 90s was not easy. Mm. When I grew up in the church, and the church is always saying gay people go to hell. And I was like, no, you go to hell.
Your mom goes to hell.
And that's how I ended up in the corner a lot. but I also got bloody noses. So I just pick my nose till my nose bled. And then I'd be like, guess who's going home?
yeah. Good tactic.
Yeah. And like I think that for as small as it probably seems to like young people today, I think seeing like what the world says about gay people and what my family said about gay people conflicting has a lot to do with how I feel about other people.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't cool to like be okay with that stuff.
Right. And your family was kind of like, didn't give a fuck.
No, dude, my dad doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. I saw him punch a dog once. Like, this man does not care.
Was the dog biting him?
There were four dogs attacking my dog. My father punched one of them.
Don't you touch my fucking dog.
He like fought off four dogs. And I was like, whoa.
Well, I mean, you have to.
Yeah, you had to. He wasn't just like punching dogs in the back.
I was like, we need a frame of reference for this.
Yeah.
Before we get
what
emails.
Details, please.
But like, that's the kind of like, what it was right was clear to me. And it was like the only sex talk I ever got was from my father. And it was
your dad gave you a sex talk?
Yeah.
That's interesting. What did he say?
If you ever get pregnant, I'll have you in the clinic so fast you won't know you were pregnant to begin with.
That
was the whole thing. And I was like, okay.
Is he pro-choice?
I was like, he's pro-abortion, it seems. Yeah. I think like a girl in my school or somewhere had like gotten pregnant and and she was keeping it.
Uh-huh.
And he was furious because she was like a girl. And it like upset him.
Oh, she was in her early teens.
And it like sparked something in him. And I was like, okay. Dad.
In that he felt like she wasn't going to have all the opportunities or go as far as she could because of the kid.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are people who probably have kids as teens and come out the other side. Like, okay. But sure. I think that a lot of schools don't facilitate.
Oh, yeah. And it certainly stunts opportunities.
They make you go home.
Yeah. Well, because they want to hide you. So many instances, yeah. It's like if you are praying, you are sent to some other classroom.
So
you're not going through the hallways during a period change. Like, you're just hidden from the world instead of just being like, all right, we have a student. She's pregnant. And we're just going to fucking deal with it like adults.
Right. Yeah.
If you're adult enough to get pregnant, you should be adult enough to deal with it and let other adults know about it.
Yeah.
So, did he tell you about condoms?
No, I think that was the whole thing.
So you didn't tell you how to avoid pregnancy?
No, he just told me what would happen. And I was like, I'm 12.
I just got my period, Dad. Give me a second.
I didn't even get my period till I was like 17.
What?
Yeah. Like I was like a super late bloomer. And like,
were you? Whoa.
Yeah.
That's the latest I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah.
No, I've heard like 19. Yeah.
Really?
That's not that bad. I can't remember. I
was 11.
Yeah. I was like 12 and it was a nightmare, but that's bad.
Yeah. But you guys got titties out of it. So good for you.
We got what?
Yeah, titties.
Oh, and I still don't have them. I'm still waiting.
You look like you got them.
No, I mean, I wish I got my period when I was 17, honestly.
Oh, that'd be great.
I would not have been like, oh man, where's my period coming?
When you still play with Barbies and you get your period, you're like, this is not right.
Yeah.
I don't deserve this.
Yeah. I don't deserve this.
Yeah,
this primal punishment.
Oh, it's horrible. Sucks. The cramps when you're so young is so bad. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
I lied about my period when I was like six. I was like, yeah, no, I got it. And they were like, well, why didn't you tell? I was like, I got pads in my bag if anybody needs a pad. Like, such a fucking tool.
Yo, you girls got pads.
You got anybody need a pad? I got a bunch.
I was so horrified to use tampons until I was maybe like 18.
No, dude. By the time I got my period, I was like, tampons. I was like, ready. I was like, I'm ready to have those.
Yeah. You had so many expired like feminine hygiene products in your room just like waiting.
Yeah, I did.
One
I had
like, day.
Because they start teaching you about it in fifth grade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's, how old are you in fifth grade? You're like 10?
Yeah. You're 11.
So I was just like 11. Waiting for this thing. Like, the horror of the wait was really what got to me.
Yeah, but it's like a shitty thing. Like, it's something that people are waiting for. And then when you get it, you're like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah, this sucks.
No, I was ready to be the cradle of life, man. I was like, I'm ready.
Oh, you liked it? Well, I mean, were you, are you like amped to have kids or?
No, I don't think I will have children. I've never felt like I will.
So it's a waste of, it's a whole, that's my feeling. Like, I'm like, why am I going through this for all this time? I asked my mom if I could get my tubes tied when I was 16 and she said, no reputable doctor will do that.
I did ask my gynecologist about that when I was like 20. I was like, can we just take it out if I don't need it? And he was like, no.
Yeah, that's a hysterectomy. And yeah, that changes things.
That changes a lot. And I was like, okay, good to know. But I did. I was excited. I thought it made me like a woman. And And I, especially like when you're 17, you're like, I'm kind of an adult. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. That's why I dreaded it at 11. Cause I was like, I don't want to be a woman yet. I want to play still.
And no, then, I was ready.
Yeah.
I was ready to get my own place and have my period.
Your own Malibu mansion.
My own Malibu mansion.
Did you have sex before you had your period?
No, I didn't have sex until I was almost 19.
With a boyfriend or a handsome man at a bar or a guy in his car?
Just like a house party. I got too drunk. I don't even really remember it. I remember like I didn't like it, but I don't really remember it.
Yeah. Was it like you wanted to rip the Band-Aid off kind of?
Yeah, I think I just felt like a big virgin. Which I was.
Right.
I was a big virgin.
But you felt like everyone knew.
What do you mean?
Like something like that was everyone knows like Molly's a virgin. Do you feel like, or was it the sense that, was it you coming down on yourself?
It was me coming down on myself. And like, I've never had like an issue like buying condoms or because my parents were very like comfortable in that way. Mm-hmm. So I was like always the one going to get birth control for my friends.
Really?
Because I don't give a shit. Like, yeah, tell my mom. Okay. Like, yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, you're being proactive about your sexual health. Like,
yeah, it's funny that someone never going to get mad at me for getting condoms. And like, I knew that. So I would like always be getting condoms for other people. Because if someone sees me at the store, like, I don't care.
Yeah. Everyone at the CVS was like, Molly's getting fucked
Molly's
a lot.
Molly's a huge whore. She buys condoms every day.
Dick on the ray. just like in a tunnel, just like a tunnel of dicks. But it was no dicks. And I had a boyfriend in high school and like we like were very precious about the whole thing. And then I was just like, this is fucking stupid.
How far did you and that high school boyfriend go sexually?
Oh my God. Pretty much the whole thing. So like it was just like oral all the time. Oral.
Yeah.
Which is like not bad.
Yeah.
By the way.
Oral's fun.
But then like it just got to be like too... you know, when you're too precious about something, how it kind of
ruins it a little.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it does. And I just like I was like, I don't actually really care about this.
It's never going to live up to your expectations anyway, especially not the first time you ever do it.
Oh, my God. The first time is a nightmare. If there's a virgin listening to it, which I doubt you have virgin.
We have really young listeners.
Yeah. Virgins?
Oh, we do. There's like 11 and 12 year olds listening.
And there's like 19 year olds who have not had sex yet. Like there's and there's 25 year olds.
And there's Ray Goops. So.
Oh, yeah. Ray Goops. He still hasn't had sex.
I don't think so.
Oh, Ray.
Hey, Ray.
Hey, Ray.
We had him on.
It doesn't get good for like years too.
Oh, well, the sex I had when I was in high school was so bad.
Yeah.
And the first time I had sex hurt so bad.
So bad.
Oh my God.
I was like,
this is the worst. Why do I want to do this?
It feels like someone shoved a hermit crab up your vagina and the hermit crab's trying to make it out of the vagina. That's what losing your virginity felt like to me.
I mean, wow.
Mine's like tink, 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 tink with his little claws. I hated it.
Did the guy's dick have
claws
or spikes?
No, but it felt like it.
It felt like fucking a cactus.
I hated it. Ugh.
Gross. Oh, no.
I think I didn't have sex for like a year again.
Yeah, that was me. Like after the first time, I was like, all right, I did it. All right, cool. Nothing changed. I'm gonna lay low for a little bit.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm good with this.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's just gonna stick to blowjobs.
Yeah, it's like when I first tried coffee, I was like, what the fuck is the big deal? Why is everybody so fucking amped on coffee?
Yeah.
It tastes horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, you learn to love it.
That's true, yeah. I mean, I think it also comes with like finding someone to do it a lot with.
Yeah.
Because that's what it really took for me. I don't think I really enjoyed it until like my first real boyfriend.
Yeah.
Like it was kind of like a thing that you did that I never really cared about.
Yeah. Because you need someone who you're comfortable to kind of like experiment with and try new positions and be like, put your finger here without feeling like embarrassed.
Yeah. I needed like, I mean, some people don't need that level of comfort, but I felt I didn't find that in myself until I met someone that I was comfortable with.
I agree. That really helped. Yeah. I mean, I was with my first boyfriend for 5 years. He was like significantly older than me. And that really spoiled me sexually.
Yeah.
He took his time. I owe him so much. Like I could not have asked for a better first sexual partner. Like,
It's hot. Yeah. That's, you're so lucky.
I know.
I'm so happy for
you. My boyfriend has a good first girlfriend story too. I'm like, God damn, that really shapes who you are, how you act.
I credit him with, you know, that's part of the reason why I'm here today. I really think that like it helped me be so open sexually and so ready to explore things.
So kids, if you're listening, you haven't had sex yet, find someone you really like and respect.
Yeah, and trust.
It's going to make it way better.
Yeah, and you trust me. I felt comfortable. I never felt stupid to, you know, put on a costume or do this. And like, you know, I was like 18 and he was like 26 and he like taught me like how to have an orgasm. Cause I was like, I don't fucking know. We have these bodies and we come into our sexual selves so uninformed.
Oh my God.
I was so like, annoying.
A nightmare.
It's the blind leading the blind. You're just like walking around in a room with all these trinkets, but there's no light. So you're like, fuck, how am I going to get through this?
Well, sex ed is just like,
so fucking dumb.
It's just like, here's a picture of your uterus. Here's some pads and here's a video of a baby being born.
Yep.
And you're just like, what?
Okay. Cool. None of this sounds appealing.
Yeah. All of this sounds terrible.
It's like a word box and they're like, okay, so write the name of what part this is over the part, but that doesn't really teach you.
Well, there's no pleasure being taught.
Doing.
And you never learn about a female orgasm. You just learn about the male orgasm because that's what makes a baby.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck this.
I knew I didn't want to have babies.
Yeah. From a young age, you knew you didn't want to have kids.
We watched the Miracle of Life in my health class.
Same.
And I raised my hand and my health teacher at the time was also my field hockey coach. So I said, Coachy, this does not apply to me and it's making me feel queasy. Can I go to the cafeteria? And she was like, yeah. And I was like,
good.
Thank you.
Good.
And I took my stuff and I left.
This does not apply to me.
This does not apply to me.
Yeah. Why would you have to be forced to watch a baby come out of a vagina?
I just felt like it was rude. I felt like it was rude
that you had to watch a baby being born.
Yeah. I was like, I don't need this.
Were you popular in high school? I feel like you were.
Do you?
Yeah.
No,
I was like, I know the real answer.
Oh.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah.
You weren't popular?
No, I had like four friends.
That's not bad.
I wouldn't say I was like unpopular, but I wasn't like, there was like a popular group of girls that I was just like, they have so many friends.
Aren't real friends though.
How do they do all this stuff?
For me, the popular kids in my high school were the hottest kids. They were the good looking kids.
Yeah.
Like the hottest ones always. But then when you branch off into something like theater, you are automatically disqualified from the popularity pool.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You knew not
you
to
don't
go
give
near
a shit.
You knew not to do theater in my high school.
Oh,
everybody
yeah.
knew that.
I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Taking a plunge. I don't care.
Oh, see, that's theater good for was you. Like dope in my high school.
See, you're so lucky.
It was dope to us, but I feel like the other kids were like, what are you doing? My high school my graduating class was 1,100 kids. Like in my class. So it was so big that the popularity thing by the time high school came along wasn't really relevant because there were so many groups and no one really gave a shit about whatever.
See, mine
was
small. It was like 125.
Oh God.
That's really small. It's very, it's like hard to even know.
You
knew everybody. I didn't really like anybody.
Oh, that sucks.
Well, it was like it's a very rich town that I went to high school in. And it was just like, rich kids are the worst.
Yeah.
They're like the worst.
They're spoiled brats.
They're so entitled.
Sometimes they're not.
They're so shitty.
Were there a lot of drug use? I feel like in rich towns, drug use tends to be a
problem. Oh, yeah. I did drugs before I got my period. Like I did.
Like what kinds?
I did drugs before I got my period.
And that's the title of your autobiography.
Yeah. And probably this episode. Did drugs before you got your period?
Oh, yeah. Ecstasy was very popular.
Whoa.
Mushrooms were very popular.
Holy, I cannot imagine. Imagine being that young and
kids
that.
In my middle school were doing acid. What else?
Heroin. Please say heroin.
Don't say heroin.
No heroin. I did. I didn't do acid. I did mushrooms. I did ecstasy like all the time. cocaine.
What?
Yeah.
In high school?
I blew meth by mistake.
No.
How's that right?
Oops.
It was a real oopsie daisy.
Yeah.
How do you accidentally blow meth?
I thought it was cocaine.
Oh.
I accidentally smoked opium once too.
Holy fuck.
Because I thought it was weed.
Where were you that there was just meth?
Man, rich kids get every drug.
Vegas. I was in Vegas.
What?
When good I, answer. Accurate.
I was 15 and I was in Vegas.
What?
For real?
Yeah. And
what the fuck?
I was at my cousin's wedding.
Oh.
And another cousin, like, put out a line and I thought
15.
It was, I thought it was coke. And I'm like, I've done coke once. And I was like, zoop. And I took the whole thing. And my face was like on fire.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh shit. Like I knew right away I'd made a mistake.
Did somebody at that hotel room or wherever you were go, Molly, that was meth?
I knew
right away that it wasn't
right
coke.
Away it was not cocaine.
That sounds like a nightmare.
And also, what cousin is letting their 15-year-old cousin do cocaine even if they said they've done cocaine before?
Shitty.
She was not much older than me. She was like 2 years older than me.
How'd she get fucking meth?
I guess actually she was older than me. She was like 19.
Okay.
Yeah. She was like 19 and she was working in Vegas. She was working on a show. I come from like theater people. So she was working on a show there. Cause that's when you start working.
So how long
did
that line of meth last you?
3 days.
No, what?
And I was sharing.
Was one of those days the wedding?
A hotel room. Yeah. I was sharing a hotel room with my mother and my sister. And I wasn't sleeping because I was on meth. And I would like close the eye that was like closest to her bed. So it looked like I was sleeping. And I just stayed awake watching the television with the other eye open. And I remember being like, this is hell. Like this is what hell is. You don't poop.
What? You don't poop?
Mm-mm. I don't know what meth is about, but I did not poop for 3 days. I felt terrible. I just started eating ice cream to like try to make myself poop. I remember that.
Oh my God.
That's like when I take Pepto-Bismol, I don't poop. It's weird. Like when I take...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I feel like some meth would probably make me shit my brains out.
Yeah.
I'm like the opposite of everyone.
You shit right away and then there's no shitting. There's no shitting or really eating. Maybe, there was a lot. There's a lot to it.
You're really selling meth here, Mom.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. So you didn't get addicted. That's good.
No. Well,
I feel like that's a very addictive drug.
Yeah. I mean, it's the best high I've ever had.
Really?
It was amazing.
Shit.
But I understood what it was and the dangers of it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
you're a logical drug user.
I was very, yeah, strategic in my drug use. And I knew I was never going to do it again.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. And it's more that at the time that was more of like, I wouldn't have even known where to get meth. You know what I mean?
Right place, right time. You know?
I was just in the right place at the right time. Meth is hot in Vegas. It's like an easy to get drug. It's really easy to get.
Isn't it like cheap too?
It's cheap and it keeps you thin. And that's what matters there. So it's just
Vegas
like.
It scares the shit out of me.
It should scare the shit out of you. It's a nightmare of a place.
Like, I know. I was like, I hate Vegas.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Now I actually really like Vegas as an adult, because I've been going for so long that I found like a way to enjoy it.
Okay.
There's a lot there as far as nature goes. It's very interesting. Like Mead is
I've
very beautiful.
I've never heard that.
Yeah. I've never heard that either.
You're not far from the Grand Canyon. You can do, there's like stuff to do in the desert that is like very restorative and it, like the desert is a beautiful place if you let it be.
Whoa.
And
that was so meta.
It also just got really dark in this room.
It did.
And I was like, God knows Molly did meth.
God knows Molly did meth. Yeah. He's been on me for a while about it. I'm so sorry. I meant she. And like there's the Wynn Hotel and there's a lot of shows there that I really like.
Yeah, the shows are great.
The shows are great. And it's, I think there's a way to do Vegas in a very wonderful way and have like a very good experience.
Oh, good. Well, yeah. When we go to Vegas, we'll call you beforehand and be like,
I got a list of recs for
you.
Oh,
good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what does feminism mean to you?
Good question. I think it means It's very important to me. I think it means showing up for yourself first and foremost as a woman, and then showing up for other women.
Ooh, that's a good definition.
Good definition. I'm going to learn me some tweets about that.
It's always been very important to me since I kind of, when I was a kid, I read a book and it was about this woman, and I don't remember what it was called, but I remember it was like the first time that I kind of realized that women weren't treated the same.
Yeah. I feel like every woman has a moment in her life where she's like, oh,
yeah,
shit.
And I was like in fifth grade, and I don't know how I got my hands on this book, but it was like, it was about this woman in Saudi Arabia who, like was kind of like not, I can't really remember it, but she was like, she didn't have to live under all these like rules and scrutinies. And then all of a sudden she did. And she was like mutilated, and she was, her clitoris was cut off, and it was all of these like nightmare things. I'm like reading this and I'm like, why doesn't she tell anyone?
Right. Cause when you're a kid, you're like, man, if I ever saw someone doing drugs, I'm going to tell or whatever. Like, I'm going to be a good Samaritan.
I mean, I was never snitching on drugs. Let's be real.
I would always said I would. And then I was like, nah, that's lame.
No, I could smell that as like a scam from a mile away. Oh. I was like, this Dare stuff.
Dare really got to me.
Dare worked my last nerve. I remember being like, these people are fucking annoying.
Agreed.
Yeah. So that's, I kind of realized that at a young age. And then I just had I have a lot of very strong, independent women in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't even dawn on me that we were treated differently, because I wasn't treated differently. Like, my father treated me, he never treated me like less because I was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we would box together and we would, you know, ski together, and we would do things together, I guess, like he would do with his son, or it didn't even feel like he was.
Yeah. He didn't hold you back or anything, or say you couldn't do this.
Or like
this,
handling you with kid gloves. I feel like a lot of dads handle their daughters with kid
overprotective,
gloves.
Overprotective, right. And it's very frustrating.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
That's great.
He was very helpful. He's like my assistant, kind of, in a lot of ways.
Daddy,
can you help me with this or what?
Dad, awesome.
But I think it didn't even like, that's when I first realized that things were different. And then I didn't understand that things were different for us in this country as women until I went out into the world and I started seeing that I was treated differently for being a woman.
How so? Is this a moving to New York realization?
No.
You moved here? Because here is weird. It's a little odd because people are very respectful and liberal bubble. But then I've also like had the worst experiences with men in the city.
Well, I think I worked in the fashion industry. I started working as a stylist assistant when I was 16 years old. And I worked through college as a stylist and as a design assistant. And I worked in production, and I did, I started just working very young. And I kind of came up against this with clothing manufacturers, especially in New York, because I would work with some companies that were owned by Hasidic men,
mm-hmm.
and they wouldn't work with me. They wouldn't shake my hand. They wouldn't even look me in the eye. And I was just like,
and that's an every day of the week thing. That's not just a Friday. Isn't there some days they're no. always like that with every woman?
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Always. Okay. No. Yeah.
There's just, I don't know shit about Hasidic Jews.
You're talking about the
You're talking about, I called her them Hasidic Jews for a very long time until it's corrected by Corinne.
No, you're thinking about things like using electronics.
And yeah. That's like a Friday thing.
Yeah. That's only what. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Corey would go home Fridays early. I just know before the sun rose or set.
Set. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't know shit about Jews, but I do know that it seems to be oppressive towards women.
And there was just like a lot of, I think working very young, and it wasn't just like with Hasidic men, it was just like, but that was like the most extreme thing that I was met
with.
That's
interesting. Cause how do you handle that? Because I respect other people's religious beliefs, but the second they discriminate against a group, against homosexuals, against women, against any people of color, anything, I'm like, fuck you. I don't respect that. And I don't have to respect that part of your religion. Yeah. Fuck off. Like, yeah. I would tell them to nicely fuck themselves.
I wasn't nice.
Yeah.
I like lost my temper a few times. And then I was like spoken to by the people I work with as like an out of control woman for not wanting to accept that. And then you just see like you're spoken to in a way as a woman a lot of the time that is like very demeaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we can never be angry. It's always crazy.
It's crazy or like
emotional.
Or you're like you're a dumb child who can't handle things. Like, oh, let me swoop and in and handle this.
Me more angry. Yeah. And that's gonna make you say I'm more crazy. And it's like, oh man.
I mean, I even experience this now where I'm in comedy, where like I'm working with a TV network and I'm developing things with them, and like men who haven't done half the shit I have,
yeah,
will try to tell me who I should work with, how I should work with them. And I'm like, why don't you worry about yourself?
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah. Like, you know who you should work with? And I'm like, not you. Like, get out of here.
Yeah.
I don't need you like mansplaining.
That, well, that's exactly what mansplaining is. It is a thing. It's very frustrating. It's just exhausting. Condescending.
It's is.
Stop telling me.
It's like
how to act or what to do or... Go fuck yourself, man. Go away.
I heard Dante Nero say this one time, and I will never forget it because I say it in my head every time it happens to me. We were like at New York Comedy Club, and he was like kind of like jabbing at the younger comics, like making us all feel stupid. And I was just like, Dante's old and weird. I didn't care.
And he has a car with his face on it.
Yeah, like whatever. Amazing. And like, I think it was like Ricky Velez like went back at him.
Yeah, Ricky's he did. Like, Ricky doesn't
so
give a fuck.
Sassy, doesn't give a fuck. And Dante goes, fuck you all. You can't hold my dick on a slow Tuesday. And I was like, I have no idea what that means, but it means everything to me. Like, and like every time it happens, I'm like, you can't hold my dick on a slow Tuesday. And I'm just like, nobody knows.
I'm just going to say it and it's going to mean whatever you want it to
and,
be.
Yeah. And it's just like how I feel. And then I think
that's about escorts.
Well, like, yeah, probably.
I think, like, you know, because, like, on the weekends they would be busy, but he, like, I get it. It does make sense.
Did you have any specific other experiences with sexism in comedy? Because every time Kurt and I do an interview, we get asked that most of the time of like, how is it being a woman in comedy? And truthfully, because I know everyone's experience is different, I haven't encountered much sexism, but that's my. The only time was when I was at the comic strip and the fucking owner looked me up and down like he wanted to fuck me and then gave me an audition and I was like 4 months into comedy. I'm like, I didn't know what was happening because I'm a naive fuck, but like,
yeah.
But that was the only thing and that's not the worst thing, you know? But I know women who have had really shitty experiences, so I'm curious if you've had.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I've experienced it pretty often in my career, I would say. I almost quit comedy because of it. I almost quit. I burped.
Mm. Who gives a fuck?
Unladylike.
This is real.
You can't hold my dick on a slow Tuesday. Was that appropriate there? I'm not sure. I just want to keep using it.
It's always appropriate.
Even
in church.
Yeah. That's where it's the most appropriate.
Yeah. Jesus can't hold my dick on a slow Tuesday.
Anyway, now that it's about escorts, I'm like, okie doke. I think I get it now.
Right? Yeah,
you ruined it for you.
Sorry. I'm like, I really tried to think. I like to know, like, the, you know,
no,
I'm where things are derived.
And I'm going to use it more probably.
Okay, good. Yeah. Good. It's, yeah. You know, it's a feminist
thing. It's there for
saying,
us to use.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a booker at a club who would like whisper in my ear that I was hot.
What?
Every time I got up on stage, like right before my performance, and I just started eating it on stage.
That's horrible.
Kind of corner me and like just like talk to me about the way that I looked all the time. And and that's actually when I met Shamika, who I work with now, who's my comedy partner.
Mm-hmm.
Was at one of these shows and she emailed me and she's like, do you want to do something with me? And I was like, I will do honestly whatever at this point because I don't think I'm doing this anymore.
Yeah.
And there was like, it was a necessary change of scenery for me because I got to work with a woman who I admire and I respect.
Yeah.
I got to create content that was had like a very female positive agenda, and it felt like an appropriate swing in another direction that I needed to go, because we were creating a web series that was geared towards women, that was geared towards younger girls, that had a lot to do with esteem. And I think that while it was disheartening, it was probably a necessary part of my growth and discovery.
Yeah. That's good. That's because, making lemons.
Yeah. I mean, I don't.
Lemonade, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I would have been so hyper-focused on creating the kind of content that I create if that hadn't been my experience.
Yeah.
Because it's not anti-man, but it is pro-woman. Yeah. And I think that's the beauty of being able to create your own content, is that you can say whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys do this.
Yeah, you're in control of it. You curate it. You are in charge of like the direction it's going in. But
if you think about this, this doesn't exist if you don't create it.
Yeah.
Like, you were never getting hired by a network to create this.
No, you need to make your own opportunities for yourself.
People at the top didn't even know that this kind of content like needed to be created. Like, Guys We Fucked is very much like, was created because we saw a need for it. Like, ultimately it was self-helping, and then it very quickly changed into something that was necessary just from the pools of emails that we were getting.
Yeah, I think it's that's the exciting thing about these platforms, is they allow people like us to exist.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot more work. It's a lot more poverty, probably.
Yeah, but it's it feels very earned, which
it does,
is so exciting, because it's so, and that's the one thing that I'm kind of realizing, like, the world's perspective on women in general, and like women in the workforce and stuff, like, women are very hard workers. And I feel like that gets overlooked a lot. And I think that to be a woman and just make something yourself or with another woman, and to see it grow and blossom into something, and you're like, fuck yes. Like, it just feels so earned, and you're very proud of it. Like, it's a good feeling. It takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, but anything good is worth that.
Yeah. I think that. And then I also, back to the feminism thing, I think that, it's how you find that in yourself.
Yeah.
And like, I started to search for it. There's a book called How to Be a Woman by Caitlin Moran. And that was like kind of the first real book about feminism I ever read.
Oh, cool. I want to read that.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
And then I just read All the Single Ladies by Rebecca Traister.
Okay.
And I
That's them out there.
Very
all the single ladies.
Yeah, all the single ladies are like, we're here. Come in our cars.
But I really, I think that even, and then that was just this summer that I read that. One, it was the first book I read since I had a car accident and I had a concussion front to back. And it felt really good to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So, which we're going to get into. Yeah.
Then two, I think it's probably the most important piece of feminist literature that exists, because
How to Be a Woman or the other book?
All the Single Ladies, by Rebecca Traister.
Okay.
I can't tell you how many things I've read since this like kind of journey into feminism that have felt too white. A lot of feminist stuff feels, it doesn't feel inclusive. It doesn't feel intersectional. You don't get like the perspective of everyone in it. And I think that this book does a really good job.
Oh, that's great.
Of being inclusive and intersectional, and telling the story of women, period.
Yeah, yeah.
In this country, from its birth to where we are, and what marriage has meant to us on various levels, and what feminism has meant to us as white women, but also to women of color.
Yeah, I actually didn't know until, embarrassingly enough, like maybe a couple of years ago, about like the whole white feminism thing and how it's not inclusive of every woman. And I didn't even know that, because that's not how I think. But
But then when we have, every time we have a woman, a non-white woman on our show, like I'm always curious about asking her what her experiences with white feminism is. What does that mean to her? How can white women be better? Because
yeah,
that's what I want to know. I don't want to be a fucking asshole like that. Like that sucks. And so we need other people, other women to just educate us on it. And that's, that book sounds like a really great
start. Yeah, I think it's incredible. But you also have to take into consideration that like you only know your own story. So
exactly. Yeah.
I think it's okay not to know these things, but I think it's important to let them sink in. And just because something isn't your own experience doesn't make it
unimportant.
Yeah. I think it's just as important. And if you look, I mean, it takes searching these things out. If you look at women's magazines, it's about everything in there is about how you look.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm.
And everything, every woman on the cover is flawless and airbrushed. And it's, I think it's damaging and it makes us, we're so much more than these things.
We're so beyond, women are so beyond what's on their face.
I can't look.
It's crazy.
I can't look at a women's magazine. Like I just can't, like these things are, they make me sick.
Yeah. It's nauseating.
You know, I was at a spa the other day, the spa that I used to work at. And I saw laying on the counter this women's magazine, and it was literally called The Fix It Issue. And the entire cover was just different sections in the magazine of things aesthetically. Because if it was a Fix It Issue and then it was like, you know,
work on yourself,
fix your inner self through something, I'd be like, okay, well that's, but it basically, it's a magazine that's going out to women that's telling women that they're broken. Aesthetically broken, not okay. And I was like, what the f-? I almost just like
took
was
it
gonna
throw it
away. But then I was like, well, this isn't my property, so I can't.
What magazine was it?
Cosmopolitan.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't one of the more general ones. It was a, I guess it was, the spa usually gets more like aesthetic based because it is a beauty industry place. Yeah. So I don't remember what it was. It wasn't one that I had heard of before, but the whole magazine was literally dedicated to telling you things that were wrong with you.
Yeah.
I mean,
and how to fix them.
If you look at all the influences in a woman's life, a young woman's life from the time that she's, you hit puberty and you become aware of like your womanhood, and you're not just like, when you get past the age of like you can walk around without a shirt and no one gives a fuck because you're a kid.
Yeah.
When you get past that.
The good old days.
Yeah, I know,
honestly,
right?
Honestly, I think I still qualify as being fine with these fucking AA titties. Nobody cares.
That's how I feel. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. But you're surrounded by all these little tiny things of like women should be better. Women should be pleasers. Women should be. And it's just tiny instances. It's a lot of times it's not huge deals. But when you add that up over your lifetime, like that really shapes how a woman looks at herself in the world. And it's so tragic to see like a lot of the emails we get are just these women are, I'm like, I read them. I'm like, oh my God, you just need to love yourself more.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to love yourself when you have all of these microaggressions telling you that you're not mm-hmm. enough. And on top, I was just having this, like I was telling Corinne, like I was like not a pretty child.
Yeah, she told me that. I'm like, really? Because you're so beautiful. Like you're so naturally beautiful. And that's why I thought you were popular in high school. Because I was like, oh, you were probably like the cool girl with the cool haircut and the rad loafers with socks and shit.
No. No, I mean, my mother is very beautiful. She was an actress and a singer and a dancer on Broadway. And
cool.
My sister's gorgeous, gorgeous. And it took me a long time to like grow into my face. And I remember I saw a picture of an aunt of mine as a little girl and we looked the same.
Oh.
But I looked at her and I knew that we looked very different, like in real time. And I was like, I look just like Kate. Like, and then I was like looking at her and looking at the picture. And I said to my mother, I was like, is her nose different? And she was like, oh yeah, you have the same nose, but you can get a nose job too. And I remember thinking, oh, okay, I'll get a nose job and I'll feel better about the way I look. And then I told my aunt on my father's side that I was getting a nose job because I was very excited to be pretty. I wanted to be pretty. You want to be pretty because you're left out when you're not. Because
that's a woman's power, quote unquote, or what they think it is. Like that's a currency.
Of course it is. Like, even when women die, they're before, it's their name when they die. And
how
they,
beautiful
how
they
beautiful
were.
They were.
Oh, every victim, every female victim of a kidnapping or murder. She was so beautiful.
She was so beautiful.
Why the fuck does that make it more tragic?
That's what I mean. It's somehow more tragic to lose
a beautiful.
A beauty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember I said this to my aunt, and she, and this was part of a thing that really shaped me. She said, there's better things to be than pretty.
So yes. True.
And she goes,
Mars.
You go, aunt. She goes, nose jobs are for actors and people who spend too much time looking in the mirror. And I was like, well, I'm very dramatic. But I was like, yeah, there are better things to be than pretty. But that was the first person. That was the first person to say that to me.
I've no one's ever said, when I was in high school and middle school, I always thought like, I want to be pretty. That's all I want.
Yeah.
That's all. Because if I'm pretty, people will like me more. I'll get more jobs. I'll just be more likable overall to the world. People will be fascinated by me. People, because I was fascinated by beautiful women.
Of
women,
course. Yeah.
And I still am. But that's not even a little bit close to like
reality.
Go, yeah. Or what matters about a woman. Like when you meet a woman who is incredible, you don't give a fuck what she looks like.
Right.
Like it doesn't matter. You're just an incredible, they're a force.
It's so funny. Yeah. I don't think wasn't even concerned with being pretty until I was like released into the real world, like in college. Like,
oh, that's wow.
Because I grew up in a house where like my mom didn't wear makeup. It wasn't something that was important or ever addressed. Like I had to like iron my clothes and look presentable, but like looking pretty was just never an issue. And I kind of like, I wish I could go back to that, like just live in that house forever. Cause it's nice to live in a house where being pretty isn't important.
Cause it's stress free.
I feel
and
like
you can worry about,
well, cause it's not
a thing.
Yeah. I'm saying cause it's not important.
You can,
is the reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's the thing that I've held on to for a long time is there are better things to be than pretty. And
so good.
I think when I started to be pretty, I was already past being pretty.
That's great.
And that's the prettiest.
That's the prettiest. Molly's the prettiest.
I love
girl.
When dudes try to like kick game and they're like, you're so pretty. And I'm like, I know. Yeah.
That's I know.
Amazing.
Well,
I know.
I loved because I the reason I know that you were unattractive as a child is because I was at a stand-up show and you kind of like went off on a tangent and it was hilarious to me because you were very like you just
very
owned the fact that you were attractive. And I love that. I love like a good cockiness because it's not cocky if it's true and if you're just like, yeah, I know it. Like I don't
well,
have to sheepishly say thank you. Like people get mad when someone gives you a compliment and you go, oh, thanks, I know. Because it sounds cocky, but it's like, no, you don't have to play dumb
no,
to the
I
things,
spend a lot of
strengths.
Time getting ready. I know how pretty I look. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I changed my outfit 5 times before I left the house.
No, but I just like, I'm just like, yeah, so what?
Yeah.
But
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But I mean, it's, and I say, it's, I'm like, a, yeah, I, but like, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Like you think you're like making some big, like, wave in my fucking ocean by telling me the
right,
way I look.
Right. Well, and when that attitude is presented by the person complimenting you, it's like, fuck off, man.
Yeah.
Go away.
And I think I think that comes from the thing that so many people do need to be told that they are pretty. Like it's almost like accruing points in like a video game. Like every time someone tells you you're pretty, it's like Super Mario getting a coin.
Yeah.
Like I really feel like
now he has fireballs permanently and like, Yoshi.
But like say something that like like say something that means something.
Yeah.
So okay. What? Let's talk about the way this fireplace looks. Let's
right.
talk about the way the table looks. Like if we're talking about the way things look, you're next, sir.
Like, and that bald spot is showing.
Mm.
Now I do want to get into, cause this is a lot of the reason that we had you here today. You were in a super, severe car accident
in recent years.
Yeah.
And I know that
it fucked you up.
Deeply affected you mentally, physically.
For sure, yeah.
And I wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
What happened?
I was we're in 2016 right now. So it was April of 2015. I was on the Pacific Coast Highway, stopped behind a line of cars on the highway. Waiting, someone was like doing something up here and another car came and hit us from behind going 70 miles per hour.
Holy shit.
So we were
70.
Yeah. He was like, but he's also in his 90s, this man. And he
should not be driving.
No, he lost his license.
That's good.
But I was, our airbags didn't come out. And I snapped all the way forward before the seatbelt caught me to snap me back.
Because you were at a stop. It wasn't like, yeah, the brakes were hit. Because that seatbelt thing is attributed to the brakes.
Yeah. No, well, he had the brakes on because we were stopped.
Oh, right.
But it was just like, it hit the back for, I don't know why. but I was lucky because the person who was in the car before me had the seat pushed back. And if they hadn't, I would have broken my face on the dashboard. There were like so many little things that could have, like if I had my seatbelt off, I would have been through the windshield. Like it's like a lot of like very,
holy shit.
I was very lucky in a lot of ways. And when I came back, I hit the back of my head on the seat and it gave me a pretty gnarly concussion. My discs also like tore out from my back and I ended up needing to have surgery this past December. And it was a slow recovery process because of my concussion. I was on bed rest for like 2.5 months. I couldn't read cause I couldn't, you know, when you look at something in a different language,
mm-hmm.
That's what it looked like to me.
Oh, wow.
So I knew it was words and I knew I should know them.
Yeah.
And then I was having, I was getting like dizzy spells. If places were too noisy, I'd get very dizzy.
Hmm. And how was that not being on bed rest for that long? Cause you're a woman who just go, go, go. You're always working on things. You're always being proactive about your career and doing projects. And then you're kind of like forced to stop.
Yeah. It was, I think it was a real combination of things for me. I think it was, it's horrifying to be alone in that way. Because I was, I had a roommate, but it's like when all you're doing is lying down, I felt like I was just like watching her go in and out, which was very strange.
Yeah.
And she was there for me as much as she could be, but it's like still very lonely.
Yeah.
And I was single when I got in a car accident. So you don't have that companionship.
Yeah.
That purse, like when all you can do is lie down, you need someone who can just lie
and
down
cuddle with you. Yeah.
So that was not there. And it was just, I didn't know how to ask for help because I looked fine after my accident. So it was a weird acceptance thing for me too, where I didn't want to like ask people to come over and like sit with me. But I was really left to my own thoughts in a way that I've never been before. There's a lot of silence that you have to be in. And
could you even look at your phone?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
It would go, the screen, it hurt my eye. I didn't realize I had a concussion.
Oh.
After my car accident. So I was going about life. I was still trying to do stuff. And I remember I came back. This happened in Los Angeles. I came back to New York and I got on stage at the Stand. And the light hit my eyes. And I couldn't talk. And I just started saying, I don't know, into the microphone. And the host had to like come back up and get me off stage.
Shit.
And I went back home and I never talked to strangers really on the street, but this guy was like outside of my apartment and he was gorgeous. So it probably had something to do with it. He's from Haiti and he had like this like thick accent and he was like this artist and he was showing me his artwork. And I was like,
yeah,
are we engaged? Are you my husband? And I lost my sight and my hearing and collapsed. And he had to like help me into my apartment and my roommate was upstairs. Like I couldn't even, he like helped me up the stairs.
Did they call 911?
No, because like, I was like, no, I'm fine. And I like, oh, I threw up in the toilet too. I remember.
You didn't get a medical exam. They didn't send an ambulance after the car accident?
There was an ambulance. We went into the hospital and they gave me an x-ray and I just, my natural reaction to emergency is to make jokes. So I was at the accident, cracking jokes and like hitting on the I started hitting on the firemen.
Yeah, I do. I hit on firemen every day.
But
I
mean, like, these men are here to save my life. I'm in the stretch. I'm like, you
it's
know, you
so
guys,
hot.
You know, you boys are hot boys. I was like,
you hot boys. That's what you are. I'm not talking about hot fire hot.
I was like, y'all are hot. Like, you actors on the set, because you look good. Like, I was like a cool aunt at this fucking car accident. Just like my friend that I was in the accident with was like, are you okay? And I was like, I'm great. So we got in there and I knew something was wrong because I couldn't remember my insurance information. I couldn't remember, but I thought I was, I've never also been injured. So I thought I must still be in shock. I must be something. And they took my x-rays, and then a motorcycle accident came into the hospital. And I just got left in the hallway for, I think, like 3 hours. And I started breaking down and saying, I need to go home. I need to go home. I go, I need friendship. This is not friendship.
You're very quotable.
Yeah. I said a lot of weird stuff.
Was anybody Cushion there? Molly. Did you have any friends visit you? Or
I was in Los really... Angeles. So Shamika was there and right. She was in the hospital, but I looked fine. And then the guy I was in the accident with and I stayed together for like 3 days because we felt really, we both were so shaken up by
yeah,
it.
That's scary.
I stayed at his place for 3 days. And they gave us painkillers and I was like in real rough shape and I'm taking these painkillers thinking that that's what's making me so loopy.
Right.
And nauseous and like
oh, yep. Yeah.
Out of it was these painkillers, but I'm like, it's killing me, but I'm like, I'm only going to take them for a week. And then I started saying things like, I went into like a Duane Reade and I couldn't find something. And I just started saying, can somebody help mommy find, I forget what I was looking for.
Help mommy find the Band-Aids and the like, Q-tips, please.
Can somebody be a mommy's helper, please?
Like what?
Like what the fuck? Can somebody be a mommy's helper?
To a young woman. Oh,
no,
man.
To literally anyone yes. around me. Not yes. even people who worked there. Nice. Just like anyone.
A part of me wishes there was a kid nearby. Everyone. Like, I mean, I can help you, lady, if you really need it.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone probably just thought you were hammered.
I think, yeah. I mean, and I also like, I'm kind of a weirdo too.
Right. So they're like,
so well. Like, Molly's really weird today. Like, it's yeah. not, it wasn't like so far off of my personality that like people were alarmed. Right. That it like really wasn't until I lost my sight and my hearing where anyone was like, I think something's really wrong.
Yeah. My mom had a concussion for almost a year. She didn't know it, and she thought she was dying. And the doctor legit, she got headbutted by our dog. That's how she got it, but she didn't know. And they thought, the doctors were like, I don't know, maybe it's cancer. And like, she was designating like, Christina, I want you to get my china. Oh DJ, my- you can get my living room table. We were like, mommy's dying. We need to go home and say bye to her. And then she had a concussion.
Yeah, dude. Concussions are the real, fuck, real, man. They're a nightmare.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like sweating and like a lot of like, I could get like what is that when men when women
hot flashes?
I would get like crazy hot flashes and sweat through all my clothes. Like I was I was in a real fragile state for a while.
And
but,
you mentioned that it kind of like helped you to appreciate your body in a way that you had never before.
Well, it was interesting because like I said, I was like a kind of a late bloomer, and when you're that attention from being pretty is a little.
It's overwhelming.
A little overwhelming, especially when there's a lot of like negative stuff that comes along with it too. And especially being in comedy, I started to hide my body when I performed. So I was wearing things that were loose, and it was like loose t-shirts and jeans and like sneakers because I didn't want people looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of in that mode when this accident happened where I felt like I was like constantly like, in a snuggie of some variation. And then when I started to get back up on my feet and started to like walk around, I'd wear a back brace. Mm. So I was forced to wear loose clothing again, but in a way where it wasn't a choice. And
that's when you were like, fuck this.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I when I lost my body is when I really started to appreciate it. And like, it wasn't until like 2 months ago that I could even wear clothes that were really fitted because I was so crooked from my surgery that I felt self-conscious. I felt like you could see that I wasn't that you could see how I looked like a squiggly line to me. And I felt like my shoulders were uneven, and like I felt just like not right. And I was sort of still like hiding. So it was interesting when I started to be able to go without the back brace and feel stronger. And I started working out with a physical trainer and physical therapist. Yeah. So it's like I'm feeling like stronger and better, and like I have my body now, and I get dressed so much differently. Like so much differently. Like, and I don't care anymore if I'm going to be on a stage or if I'm going to like,
do you wear clothes? Like, what do you think of before you put on an outfit? Cause I completely understand the notion of wanting to cover your body, cause you don't want the attention, cause it's unwarranted, and you just don't, that's not the focus of when you get up on stage and do stand-up comedy. Like, what do you put on outfits? Do you dress yourself? Like how you want to feel? Or,
well, I think the other thing, I'm going to answer this, but I think the other thing about that, the kind of solitude that you're in when you're on a bed rest, is that you face yourself in a way that you probably have never had to before. Mm. So I feel like there's a new section of my life, and this is it. I don't feel the same as I did before all of this. I feel like a very different person, and I feel like, I had to figure out how to like really love myself in a way.
Yeah.
That I don't think I did before. I think I just was going. You know what I mean? When you're just on like autopilot in a way.
Well, and it's hard, you know, people aren't alone a lot.
Yeah.
Like New Yorkers don't get a lot of alone time. If you live by yourself, that's a privilege. Usually it's considered, because it's hard, it's expensive. And then if you live with a boyfriend, but also traveling, there's people everywhere all the time. And then the industry you're in, you're always with people. And it's like to be by yourself. Like for me, sometimes when I'm sitting on the toilet are the only moments in my day where I am alone.
Yeah.
And I take it in so much. And then when I get a day by myself, I'm like, I feel rejuvenated, but then too much time. And then you're like, okay, now I'm forcing, I have to face myself.
It's a hell of your own sins. I mean, you are, I think I just like really struggled for a long time too with depression and like low self-worth. And I had all of these things that I had acquired over the years and built up. And you have no choice but to figure out a way out of it in that situation, because it's like you're literally being tased by your own thoughts.
Shit.
So I have now a sense of like pride in myself that I don't think I had before. So I think, and I do a lot of stuff for self-care because I think what I said before about feminism is like, you can't show up for other people if you're not showing up for yourself. So and that means to me, it means like a lot of, I meditate and I do a lot of things to help me feel good.
Yeah.
And one of those things is getting dressed and color. And like, I still love to wear black. I have like a section of my closet that's just like
we
all black.
Do.
I love it. But I mean, like it's more, I dress less about how, I want others to see me and more about how I see myself. I think that's been my biggest shift in getting dressed. And like, I'm just so happy to like be able to stand. Yeah. And I know that sounds like such a weird thing to be happy
when
for.
When it's taken away from you, you have a newfound appreciation for it, I would imagine.
And like every day that I get stronger, I'm so grateful for. And I think like I put clothes on my body in a way that I'm just like, look at you. You know, like I almost look at it
call
like,
Molly.
Like a separate thing. I'm like, look at your back. Like,
yeah.
Look at your back. And I put clothes on in a way that I think kind of shows that off in a way that I wasn't before.
Yeah.
So it's a totally different way of living. Like I look back.
Does it feel more true to yourself?
Yeah. And I think I made a decision this year that I was only going to date when I felt strong and I felt like I could give something to another person, but also when I felt like I had loved myself as much as I could.
Yeah, that's a great barometer.
And it's been 2 years since I've dated.
Wow.
And I like just went on my first date like 3 weeks ago.
How'd it go?
Was it like riding a bike for the first time? Again?
He tried to hold my hand and I was like, get the fuck out of here. What the hell?
On the first date?
He's very cute.
Ballsy.
But it was like, it was interesting. The second I said that and then I was like, okay, I'm here. I was like, whoa, we're here. It was scary. It's a little scary, but it feels really good to, I mean, and it's only like been a date, 2 dates, but it's like, it feels good to just even be open in that way again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's awesome.
And to like spend time with someone, not out of loneliness, but out of
wanting to spend time with choice. Someone.
Yeah. Like just wanting to share and being able to, like being able to is such a gift that I never even, I don't think I even ever considered before.
Yeah.
So like, I don't feel like the same person. So it's interesting, like dating, like I like don't almost know how to operate because I'm like, this is cool.
Such a clusterfuck.
I'm just like, I'm having a good time, which is good.
That's how I feel even without having been in a car accident. So
it's crazy. It's crazy to have like, it's so crazy to just be happy. Like it's it's confusing a little bit too when you're like, just
where like, are the obstacles? Oh wait, I don't have to have them.
You don't have to, and they can be like not a big deal too.
Yeah,
you know,
like, shit can be like fine.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't have to have an experience. Not every experience you have has to be attached to pain. And I feel like a lot of the times we go through life thinking that it does.
Yeah.
Like there are some people who can't experience something without pain. They have to complain. They have to be tired. They have to be upset about something in order to experience things. Mm. And I suddenly don't feel that way. I mean, I guess not suddenly. It's been a cool 2 years.
That's amazing.
And on that note, can you tell us a little bit about, I know you, Austin Martinez Comedy is, which is your comedy duo, is working on a project. You want to plug that?
When does this come out?
A couple weeks.
Yet. Yeah.
We're not sure because we're going to be on tour all month. So
where you get us when we're done. I do a show on True TV called Late Night Snack. It's premiering, November 2nd.
Nice.
And I create a musical comedy with my partner, Shamika Christina Martinez.
Shamika Christina Martinez
is
that's a fucking amazing
name to say, right?
Damn, that girl got a great name.
If you say Shamika Christina Martinez to a 3-year-old, the child will say it back to you with like this joy.
Yeah, like I say it with joy.
Love saying Shamika Christina Martinez.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So we do musical comedy. It's very based in feminism and how we feel about what feminism is. Feminism is.
Yeah.
Feminism is.
I don't know. Can I say this? I guess I can. I mean, I signed the contract. We got a pilot deal from True. So we're working on a show for them right now. So, you know, hopefully Smoothie will have her own show in a few months. I call myself Smooth Mall, by the way. I guess I should have said that. That's what I started calling.
Is that your cat or?
No, it's what I started calling myself after my back surgery when I was on painkillers. I was like, oh, Smooth Mall when I got my new back. That's what I did.
New back, new me.
I guess that's where we are.
And what's your Twitter handle?
It's Molly O. Austin, as is my Instagram, which I'm really on more, I would say Instagram more than Twitter. Okay. And then our stuff, we put it on AustinMartinezComedy.com.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Molly, for sitting down with us on your favorite chair.
I'm so glad. I'm in love with that chair. I have been for so many years.
It's
I'm
so,
so glad
beautiful.
You appreciate it.
This has been Guys We Fucked, the Anti-Slut Shaming Podcast. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Self-esteem will take that. Take one thing.
guys, we fucked. This is Corinne, and I don't need a bra, but when I wear one, I like to wear Third Love's 24/7 t-shirt bra. It's the most comfortable bra I've ever owned. It's made out of super soft memory foam that molds to your shape and truly gives you the perfect fit. They stand beside this product so much that they're willing to let our listeners try this bra for free for 30 days. If you love it, keep it, and they'll charge your card. If you don't love it, send it back with a note that says, thank you, but I'm not interested, and your card will not be charged. Start your free trial now at thirdlove.com/GWF.